Mr. Benedict D'Souza, real one. Mr. D'Souza, can you tell us something about your personal background?
Well, I was born on March 1919, March 20th, and the place that I was born was, it was called the Maternity Hospital, which was only a big house in the old General Hospital. This house was actually, I was told later, the home for the nursing sisters, which were all European. And we had, I believe, maybe one or two births a week. My father was a doctor in that area, and we were given, of course, priority and everything, and the best of everything. After that, all I can remember was at the age of between 4 and 5, where we began to play around with the children of the other doctors, or what we call dispensers. And we were staying on a very high hill, and I remember very clearly it had 32 steps to go down, and then there was a level and another 16 steps, which made it a total of 48 steps to go down to catch a rickshaw to school, or a special car which used to fetch us during when a big crowd of us had to go to church on Sundays. Our evenings were spent playing with those children. During the day, we had no friends, just my sisters and brothers. Well, I was the youngest. I was the second youngest child and the youngest boy. There was a sister after me, an elder brother and an elder sister before me. Naturally, I teamed up with my brother and sometimes with my younger sister, if I could be bothered. I did not go to school that time, but we had, teachings by my sisters, and from whatever we could gather from the rest of the family. I used to go down and watch my sisters and brothers, cousins, play tennis, which was sometimes with the madmen. But these madmen were not completely mad. They were let loose. They were quite sane, and they were allowed to play tennis with my sisters and brothers. And I remember very clearly a certain man by the name of Mr. Pennyfather. He used to keep us amused by taking the tennis ball and hitting it with his racket straight up to the sky. And he used to catch it. At times he used to try and make us catch it. Of course we could not. The other times when we played, it was playing around, just playing around the tennis court. And as soon as it got dusk, we were all whisked home. Of course, we knew where to find our way home. It was quite easy. And as soon as we reached home, we used to be ordered to get our bath. We had no showers those days. And after bathing, we were dressed up. And we had to sit down for dinner. There was a huge table there. My father, mother, brothers and sisters, sometimes our cousins used to come along there, and after the usual grace before meals, used to have our dinner. We used to play for a little while, and he was up to bed. And we had to sleep under a mosquito net. Although it was, there were not so many mosquitoes around, but my father, being a doctor, was very, very scared about us getting any other kind of fever due to mosquitoes. Well, the days went on like that until my father retired. Then we moved off to a place in Joo Chiat, the old Joo Chiat near the sea. We had a big bungalow house there, and we also had a big tennis court. There was a big garage, and it was a two-story building. I went to school from there. And we used to go swimming, boating, even at a very small age. And it was there that I became very sick with malaria. My father, being a doctor, had all the medicine with him. And in those days, the cure for malaria was quinine, liquid. And we had to take it, I had to take it 3 times a day. With all that, I took very ill one day and had a very high temperature. And I found out later, I remember this very clearly. I asked my mother, say, I had a good sleep. Why didn't you wake me up? She said, no, you will know later. Then I found out I was unconscious for 24 hours. And I believe later on, as the years went by, that this quinine had some effect on my teeth, and I started losing my teeth. But maybe it was also partly due to taking too many sweets. However, we moved from there to Serangoon Road. And there was another big house. It was a big bungalow, big compound. And we had about 8 rooms there. The rent was cheaper than the one we were staying in Joo Chiat. The sad part of it, my father took ill and died there. And I was fast asleep. It was my elder brother, the one just above me, who came to me and said, Ben, Daddy is dead. I got up, oh, Daddy was dead. I didn't cry. I was too small to cry. I didn't realize it. And, well, after his death, we had made many friends around there, all Eurasian friends, because there was mostly a Eurasian community down there. We made many friends, and we did a lot of things little boys would do, like cycling, running after the lorries with pineapples, because pineapple factory was there. We used to go and swim in the canal, which was dirty. We used to play a lot of games together. We used to go for night walks, morning walks, cycling. And after that, we had to go back to Katong to stay. Some reason or other. Oh, I'm sorry. From where we were, we went to another house in St. Michael's Road in Serangoon. It was a better house. Another, quite a big compound. And the same number of friends came there, the same type of friends, and with a few others. We used to arrange for hockey matches, football matches. And I remember my father used to remind us to always go to church, and he used to pick on us, especially me, to go to what we call Vespers in those days. It was held at the cathedral. There was only a few Catholic churches in Singapore. So after his death, I had this still in my mind, and my brothers, my mother used to take me just in the middle of a hockey game or a football game. But I think those days now still ring out in my mind, because I have come to know, bring my memory back to those old days where there was a lot of praying, unnecessary praying, I think so. And, well, it's to be nice in a way, because whenever he used to bring me to church in the evenings, he used to dupe me with, rather put a carrot in front of me, saying, if you come with me, I'll buy you ice cream. And the Red House, which is the Red House now still, was there at that time, sorry. And invariably, you take me to a place called Tan Kah Kee, which used to sell shoes. He was a millionaire those days, that man. And he'd buy a pair of shoes for me and buy one for himself. And when he'd go back and count, he had about 20 pair of shoes at home. And he only needs his shoes just to go up and walk a few steps up the hill, and there was his office. That was that part. And then we shifted from there. We went back to Katong, I think. Yeah. And then my brother and I were taken to a place in Borneo called Labuan to stay with our uncle and auntie. I was 10 years older, and I spent 4 years in this place called Labuan. The standard of education there wasn't very high, but I learned plenty about games. I learned how to catch fish. I learned how to swim from little Malay boys, 6 years old. I was 10 years old. I learned how to swim from them. I learned how to catch fish. I learned how to row a boat. And I used to follow a friend of mine to go and shoot birds and even crocodiles. And I remember one night, my sister was along. That boy was her boyfriend. So we went. It was a very eerie, quiet and dark area. There was a small stream there. It could hardly be called a stream. And I remember we brought some snacks with us. They went ahead, and I forgot the snacks, and I went back to take it. On my way back, I heard a big swish. And there, the tail of this crocodile had just missed me. And of course, this boyfriend of my sister's took his torch and shone it on wherever he heard the sound, because at night you can only see the eyes of the crocodile. You can't see it at all. You can't see the whole shape, just the two eyes. And with that, if he's a correct shooter, a sharp shooter, he'd be able to shoot between the eyes or under the neck. And there, the crocodile will squirm, then if it gets a few more shots, the crocodile will die, and they'll get help the next day, claim it as theirs, and sell the skin. Of course, the crocodile will have to be skinned by experts, not by this friend of mine. And many, many years later, when I came back to Singapore, I wrote to the press called the Free Press, the most dangerous experience I've had in my life. And I had $5 for that. I got the cutting somewhere, I don't know where it is, but I remember I had $5 for it. It was a true story, you see. Well, when I was 14, I had to come back to Singapore, because, as I said earlier on, the standard of education there was not very high. I had to come down and sit for my 7th standard again, because they found out I was not qualified for the junior. In those days, we had junior and senior. So I sat for my 7th standard year, and I passed. very well. Although I had to have extra tuition, a few of us had to have extra tuition in algebra and geometry. And we had a very good teacher who took pains in us, in teaching us. And we were talking about him a few days ago. And that man said, yes, that man is a very good mathematic teacher, algebra and geometry teacher. And he got me through. And, well, then I sat for my junior. I did very well. In those days, all you had to get was 33 1/3%, and you would have passed the exam, provided you passed all the subjects. Like a smart aleck, I took up Malay. On my own, I flopped. I flopped the junior. So I sat one more year. And this time, I flopped in what we call religious knowledge. So, I felt that I was no good and I wanted to go and work. I was 17 then. So I went out of school. I stayed with my sister and I hounded one particular company just for a job. I didn't care what kind of job it was, as long as it was a job. And the name of the company was the NAFI, Navy, Army and Air Force Institute. And they had many branches. And I was stationed at Selarang Barracks in 12 Milestone Changi, the old Changi Road. I was taken there as a counter clerk. I worked there for less than a year. I got on very well. I was the only non-Chinese there. I got on very well, but I wanted some excitement. I heard news that they wanted some people to join a company called Gammon Malaya, and it was in a place called Sungai Petani. So the man who taught me the guitar and another man who was in our Hawaiian band, we went over to Sungai Petani and we worked there. Because of my initiative, or because of my hard work, or because I was a Singaporean, I was selected to come down and to work with the company in Singapore to open up the wireless station in Jurong Road, the old Jurong Road. Well, I worked there, and then the war came. So my brother was all for that we should join some sort of defense corps and get out and fight for the country. I signed up for the Royal Artillery, went for the medical. The man who tested me pressed my right eye so hard that when he shifted his hand to my left eye, I couldn't see. Immediately, I failed the test. Then I applied to join the RAF, the Royal Artillery Force, Royal Air Force, sorry. When I went there, the same thing happened. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm very sorry. When I applied for the Royal Artillery, they took a long time to reply to me, so I moved off to this place in Sungai Petani. When I came back and wanted to join, I applied again, this time in Chucha Police Station. The question was, did you apply before? And I said yes. I was struck off. I was told to go home. So I applied for the Royal Air Force as a spotter. And that joker put his hand on my eyes, right hand, eye so hard that when he changed his hand to my left, I couldn't see. I failed it. The next thing, they wanted people for the Royal Army Medical Corps. I joined up with my brother in front of me. There, I was asked whether I failed any eye test. I said yes. Before he could say anything, he said, okay, wait. And I read everything so nicely, I was taken on. My brother was in front of me. Oh, sorry. My brother was behind me. My army number was 7532509, and he was the next one, 510. Well, we joined the army. We went through 3 months of hardship on a very small salary and a lot of hard training. We went through all that, and later we were posted to various places. But before that, we were all put together and we had to live under canvas, which means in a tent. We were posted to Changi. We started off in GSU, that's in Tanglin. Then we went to Changi. We had some more training there in field work, because although we were RAMC, we were a subdivision of, called number 1 Malaya Field Ambulance. So everything was in the field. We had to cook in the field. We had to learn to cook, to build our own hospitals under canvas, our own operation theatres under canvas. When we were asked what branch, or rather what department we wanted, I chose the cookhouse. But having had to undergo all the training in first aid and what have you, my brother chose the office. He was more clerical than anything else. Then, as the war was coming, it was getting worse, I was made up to Lance Corporal. Then he was made up to Lance Corporal. I was made up to Corporal. Then he was made up to Corporal. Then I was made up to Acting Sergeant. He was made up to Acting Sergeant. Then, as a young man, I was a very impatient chap, very quick with my hands. There was one chap who was a private. He was very rude to most of us. It happened during our lunch hour. He was so rude to me that I let fly with my hands and hit him, and a few other things involved. In the end, I had 9 charges preferred against me. I had my stripes taken out immediately, back to Buck Private. I had to undergo CB, confined to barracks, for 2 weeks. No beer, drinking, no nothing else, no friends, and, you know, everything else. But I was lucky because my brother told me, he said, since there was a war going on, he said, you could be shot. The reason being, you had stopped the people from working. You had caused a kind of a riot there, so I could have been shot. But the good old colonel, my CO, let me go. And it wasn't long after that he died because of a shrapnel. Well, everything went on quite okay to the night when the Japanese came over. And before that we were posted by turns, or just a case of luck, to various units, like the Malay Regiment, like the Indian Regiment. And it was my good fortune that I was transferred or posted to the Malay Regiment in what we call now Tanjung Penjuru. It's a land now full of companies and warehouses in Jurong. Of those days, of course, it was just jungle. I was posted to this Malay regiment there as orderlies, but they looked upon us as doctors. Well, anybody was sick, we had to diagnose as best as we could, and if they were bad, send them by ambulance, by their own transport to a hospital. To have a bath, we had to walk about half a mile and bathe by what we call standpipes beside the stream, and walk half a mile back. By the time we reached back, we were dirty again, so we used to carry a pail of water just to clean our feet. It was during one of those days when we were at the Malay Regiment that we were recalled. Everybody had returned to the unit. So we returned to our unit, and we were asked to be posted well, there's just two of us. We were asked to stand by in South Buena Vista Road, just before you, just on the top of the hill, just before you go down to Pasir Panjang. Well, we struck camp there, I mean tent. It's just the two of us. We got all our kit ready. I think we had a beer each or something like that, and it was late, so we went off to sleep. It wasn't about 2 hours later then I was awakened by this pal of mine, and he said, because the enemy bombs overhead, strike 10. So the two of us had to strike 10. In the meantime, our ambulances, who knew where we were, came to pick us up. So we had to strike 10 as fast as we could. We were trained in that. We were young and we could do it. Put it in the ambulance, and they took us back to, I can't remember where, I think it was back to camp. And it wasn't long before, I don't remember, that same night or very early the next morning, that we had to go from place to place. You know, as soon as we were settled down in one place, we had news from the DR, that's what we call dispatch rider. He would come and say, okay, pack up, go to another place. So we were finally in West Point, the good old West Point, where it's full of jungle. And we were left there, and we told that they would come for us. They never came back. There were just two of us. And we had sniping and shooting going on and bombing, but we were not hurt. And there were trenches around us. And I remember this clearly. I do not know where, how, but I had a prayer book with me. We were both Roman Catholics. I took out my prayer book, and he took out his rosary. I took out my rosary, and we started praying and praying and praying. We couldn't do much. Everything was quite quiet the next day. We took whatever kit we could, our haversacks and things like that, and we walked and walked and walked until we found some of the Malay regiment soldiers who took us back to camp, and this time it was in Tanglin. They took us back to camp, and of course we were questioned where we were and all that. We had no food, we had hardly anything to eat. Oh, whilst we were there, we had a little rice, cooked rice, and this friend of mine and I went to look for food, and all we found was grass. Whether the grass was edible or not, we didn't care. We were hungry. We had some sauce and we had some chili with us. So we managed to boil the grass. We put the chili. We had some onions, I think, and the sauce, and we ate with the rice. So when we reported back to camp the next day and told them about this, straight away they didn't give us food, but they gave us some kind of medicine that, you know, will not make us get bound up in our tummies. And then we had our food, but we hadn't any sleep. That same night we had to pack up and take all our medicine, and we went to the museum. We slept there. There was shelling and shelling all over the place. We never heard, we never saw anything. We just saw flashes and flashes, and they heard the noise, that's all. I didn't sleep at all that night. The next morning early, we were told that we had to go to the Victoria Theatre, pack up our things and go there. We went there and they said, I'm sorry now, we have surrendered. So Bob's your uncle. You are Singaporeans, you can use your uniform and go and get caught by the Japanese, or you can strip and go back home. Good luck and God bless you. Some of us were lucky, some of us weren't. I reached home. And of course, my mother and sisters were all happy to see me.